Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Tuesday live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Joy Taylor is back. A little under the weather yesterday, still fighting that East Coast flu she brought with her. How are you?
I'm doing good. Voice is a little hoarse, but we're good. We're here. You know what? We play Herd.
Of course we do. That's what we do every day. We play Herd. It's good to have you in. We talked about this yesterday, Joy. Just so many good stories in sports right now. And Magic Johnson, the great Magic Johnson, one of the great basketball players of all time, and certainly the most influential basketball player probably in the history of Los Angeles. And that's saying something, by the way. There's been a lot of great athletes. His business, his outreach all over the town. He's everywhere in Los Angeles. Now part owner of a baseball team, the Dodgers. But he said yesterday on another show on another network that LeBron has 1 year left, and then it's Kevin Durant's league after that. And I thought it was an interesting statement. And I thought, all right, let's go back. Speaking of Magic, let's go back 40 years. It's 2021. Let's go back to 1981. Most of you were not watching the NBA in the 70s. I was kind of. But that's kind of when the league felt like it got big. David Stern, stars. The 70s didn't really have a face in the league. I mean, it really didn't. There was a bunch of different champions. I mean, Dr. J, kind of. So let's go to 1981. And let's look at who has been the face of the league. So in 1981 to 83, Magic had a title with Kareem. Magic really helped the rebirth of the NBA. David Stern, the new commissioner's like, let's promote the players. Magic was the face of the NBA. It was his league. Larry Bird also came in about the same time, and then Larry Bird wrestled it away from him for about a three-year period, mid-80s, where Larry was winning MVPs, Celtics were giving the Lakers a hard time. Magic wrestled it back from him at the end of the 80s to close out the decade. Magic now, the hook shot, and winning championships and MVPs. So the 80s was Magic and Larry's league. There's no dispute. As good as Isaiah Thomas can be, it was Magic and Larry's league. They were the most marketable. One was East Coast, one was West. One was a Celtic, one was a Laker. It was really a great time. I remember it well. It really felt like the... In sports, I look back and I think that's the beginning of the NBA for most people watching our show. That really feels like the beginning for most people under 60 watching the show. So it was Magic and Bird. Then we go to the 90s. Well, you know what happened there. It was Michael Jordan's league. From about 90 to 98, even when Michael briefly left for about a year and a half, it's still Michael's league. Only people winning it because Michael wasn't there. It was Michael's league. And then for about a 7-8 year period, like 99 to 2007, when centers mattered, it went Duncan, Shaq, Duncan. That was the Tim Duncan came out of college and was completely polished his first day in the league. And Shaq was the big personality. They were opposite human beings, right? One, the big personality, one very reticent, but they were the faces of the league. And then for a brief time, the great late Kobe Bryant, for about a 2-3 year period, 2008, 2010, went to finals, won a couple of them with Pau Gasol. He was the face of the league. From that until today, it's been LeBron's league. 10 years, with a tip of the cap to Steph Curry, who in the later years kind of tried to wedge in there, but it's LeBron's league. So I want you to think about that first of all. 40 years, 7 people. 5 of the 7 are very engaging personalities. Magic and Michael was glamorous, and Shaq and Kobe and LeBron and style and personality and the great smile, and they embraced it. Bird, feisty and combative. Duncan, reluctant. So it does prove, like Kevin Durant's personality, he's a little combative and feisty. So is Bird. You could do that. He can be sometimes withdrawn. So was Duncan. You can be face of the league, but it's harder. It is harder. Market size, again, is not everything. Duncan was the face of the league. in San Antonio. So now let's get to Kevin Durant. Could he be the face of the league? Well, it's interesting. In his three stops, I'd argue he's never been the face of the team. In Oklahoma City, what was his frustration? Management sided with Westbrook. As wrong as they were, and they were really wrong, Kevin got frustrated with the coach and the GM who wouldn't confront Westbrook, who was very difficult to play with. Kevin was called at one point Mr. Unreliable. Westbrook was more popular. Then he goes to Golden State, and he was their best player. Finals MVP. But the culture was created by Steph. Steph is the Bay Area. It was Steph's team. And then he goes to Brooklyn. Okay, it's his team. Well, not really. The last 2 weeks, it's been his team. But in the regular season, the hottest the Nets got was when KD got hurt and Harden took over. And weren't we on this show saying, man, Harden really is a valuable player. He really is. I came on and said, I always saw him as a scorer. James Harden's actually really valuable. He's a really good distributor. He's trying on defense. It's hard to be the face of the league when three different times you haven't necessarily been the face of your team. And we do this all the time. We confuse brilliantly talented with the face of something or the culture setter. No, Kevin Durant is the most effortless, brilliantly gifted scorer in basketball. And I would argue that's probably been the last 8 years. Maybe I'm wrong on the timeline. Maybe it's 10, maybe it's 7, maybe it's 6. But he's a little withdrawn. He's a little combative. He's a little feisty. And I'm not really sure he really wants to be that. Kevin Durant this year and next, as long as he's healthy, will be the most gifted scorer in basketball. But don't confuse that with being the face of something. The most important something. I don't think right now the NBA necessarily needs a face of the league. I think they're getting closer to the NFL. I think what's ironic here is the NFL was always very corporate. Actually, it's borrowing some NBA stuff. Let's let our guys celebrate. Guys are getting shoe deals. Star quarterbacks have an opinion. And the NBA, I think, looking at the NFL, is trying to borrow some of their strengths. Why can't we just have good stories, good teams, fun people to root for, big market, small market, it doesn't matter. And actually today, I would watch a Phoenix Suns-Milwaukee Bucks final. And I think it would be fascinating. And I didn't think that for a lot of years when smaller markets got in. I don't think the NBA needs a face. I think they've been too beholden to that through the years. Remember, when Magic and Bird took over, the league was a little bit of a mess. It had come out of the 70s. Many teams were bordering on bankrupt. It had a little bit, reportedly, you know, there were some drug concerns in the league. It didn't have a face. The Lakers were the best franchise. Not a lot of teams were making money. It wasn't well run. In the 70s, playoff games, I'm not joking, we're on tape delay after the 11 o'clock news. I wish I was joking. I think the NBA, actually, despite its critics, is moving into an interesting time where there's so much global talent. There are so many gifted players. You're not beholden to one guy. I got to be honest. I love watching Zion. And then I watch Trae Young and Ja Morant, Devin Booker, and I can't take my eyes off them. How about the NBA borrows a little from the NFL? They don't need one team and one guy. Because I've watched the NFL over the last several years, and it's helped them borrow a little from the NBA. You're noticing that, right? The NFL watched the NBA and said, damn, they're good on social media. Man, the talk shows talk a lot about him. Skip and Stephen A. and everybody just all would talk in NBA, and the ratings aren't that huge. What? The NBA is star-driven, and they let their players celebrate and have fun in social media, and the NFL looks at that and goes, we can use a little bit of that. I kind of like that. And they have. And the NBA looks at the NFL and thinks, And Kansas City wins a Super Bowl. Tampa wins a Super Bowl. It doesn't even matter who wins a Super Bowl. It's just a bunch of good stories, good teams. Feels like some competitive balance. And this year, we've got the Clippers better than the Lakers. The Phoenix Suns probably better than all of them. And the Milwaukee Bucks ready to take on the Atlanta Hawks. And every night I'm watching. They don't need a face. They did in the 70s. They did in the 80s. They did in the 90s. They did when Jordan left. They don't now, in my opinion. All right, so Tom Brady, you know, for a nice guy, holy smokes, Tom swears. So he calls out somebody last night, and I don't think he's calling out who everybody thinks he's calling out. We'll talk about that next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hot water that never runs out. Go to Navien. Navien tankless water heaters. The web address is easy to remember and free. Tanklessmadesimple.com. Tanklessmadesimple.com. Uninterrupted is the show. It's LeBron James, Maverick Carter's sort of production company, and they have a show called Uninterrupted where they bring like celebrities on and comedians and sports stars, and they kind of barbershop it and just have a big open conversation. They're swearing. There's big laughs. And Tom Brady appeared on it and was asked. It was kind of fun. He was asked, you know, when it got down to it, those last two or three or four teams that you were interested in, how did that go?
One of the teams, and they weren't interested at the very end. I was thinking, you're sticking with that mother.
All right, who's he dogging? So Tom wanted to go to a team. Who was he dogging? Now, let's just run through it. Many people think it's Garoppolo. It's not Garoppolo. Garoppolo just been to a Super Bowl. Okay, Garoppolo and Brady have the same agent, a really nice guy, smart guy. I know him, Don Yee. You're not going to dog Garoppolo on television because Don Yee, Garoppolo and Brady, there's a commonality there. That's not who he's dogging. Trust me on that. You could say the Chargers, because there were a lot of rumors with the Chargers. Well, the Chargers, remember Tom said, stick with somebody. They weren't sticking with somebody. They were moving off Phillip Rivers, and they wanted Brady. In fact, in a weird moment of fate, I actually called the Chargers and told them Brady signed with Tampa, and their reaction was, oh, damn, let me call Don Yee. It wasn't the Chargers. It wasn't Tennessee. There were rumors about Tennessee because Tannehill had just beaten Brady and was red hot. And you would look silly saying, that guy, he just beat you and played well. It wasn't the Colts because they weren't sticking with anybody. They had just acquired Phillip Rivers, but they were interested in Brady. He wasn't really that interested in them. And then there's the Saints. That was talked about. Drew and Tom are very respectful. About as respectful as, you know, competitors can be, they really like each other. He would never say that about Drew Brees. It's also not Derek Carr, because Brady wasn't interested facing Patrick Mahomes twice a year with a Raiders bad roster, and he's not, you know, West Coast was always a challenge, and that got in the way for the Chargers, too. It was West Coast, right? It felt like too far west, and they have a bad roster, first year in Vegas, Gruden. So Tom Brady liked three teams. This I know. Tampa, where he signed, the Chargers, he liked their weapons, he liked their roster, but it was West Coast, and that hurt, and Chicago. He was into Matt Nagy, liked Tampa, good enough offensive line, number one receiver, Allen Robinson, good defense, big city. You figuring out who it is? It's Mitch Trubisky. He really considered three teams. He considered Tampa, the Chargers, and Chicago. He wasn't going to go to San Francisco. Garoppolo, Don Yee there. He'd just been to a Super Bowl. The Colts, it's Peyton Manning's team. Chargers, Raiders, mostly out west. Tom wanted to stay on the coast he's been playing on. It is a shot at Mitch Trubisky, who, for the record, is now a backup. So what Tom is saying as the GOAT to a now backup is a reasonable thing to say. Wasn't Tannehill, not Derek Carr. Derek Carr and Tannehill can play. Those guys can play. Garoppolo, by the way, for all the criticism he gets, we know Kyle Shanahan's a great coach. Kyle Shanahan's won like 18 to 20% of his games when Garoppolo doesn't start. Garoppolo can play. Tom was with him for 3 years. He can play. He got to a Super Bowl. His only year is standing up in San Francisco. He got to a Super Bowl. So it is Trubisky. That's the answer. And that's the truth. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
That was some detective work there, Colin.
Thank you. There's just
Sherlock Holmes
that,
over here.
That is pretty harsh language. Obviously, it's in the moment, and Tom's, it's funny, but you can start boiling it down. You're not going to do it to a friend. You're not going to do it to somebody that beat you. You're not going to do it to somebody you share an agent with. The Chargers and the Colts aren't sticking. Sticking is the key. When Tom Brady said, you're sticking with, that means a guy that's played for a couple years and hasn't been very good.
Yeah, you're not talking about a rookie.
Of course.
Great process of elimination there. So the Suns and Clippers will be playing game two without their stars again. Both Chris Paul and Kawhi Leonard have been ruled out tonight. CP3 is still in health and safety protocols, and Kawhi is sidelined with a knee injury. The Suns are 5-point favorites tonight, according to FoxBet.
Yeah, in a weird world, it's kind of fair that both Chris and Kawhi are out, right? Like, so the other guys, your Devin Booker and your Paul George, have to really take the series over. But I'll say this, is that the last eight games, the Suns have won all of them. That's a tough place to play. And though the Clippers did overcome 2-0 deficits the previous two times, we have not seen a team, since Chris Paul has been healthy in the playoffs and on the floor, nobody's really outplayed them for a game. The Lakers had a great quarter. Didn't like Anthony Davis have a great half or a great quarter against them? But I don't think this is a team you can overcome. I think Utah is a team you can overcome an 0-2 deficit because they can't defend the wing. This team can defend Kawhi and Paul George.
Look, I'm not going to count the Clippers out at this point. I think that's kind of silly to do that. But I'm with you. The Suns are just playing really complete basketball right now. They're -450 to win the series right now, according to Fox Bet. Bucks are favored -500. I mean, Booker had a 40-point game, his first career triple-double, 40, 13, and 11. I mean, Paul George had a nice game, too, 34 points, 4 rebounds, and 5 assists. But the Suns are just, please forgive my pun, on fire right now.
Boom!
They are, though. I'm firmly on the Suns bandwagon.
Yeah,
like I love the energy that they play with. They're fun. Their fans are fun. I heard you talking yesterday. I watched the show even though I was off. How sad would it have been for the Suns to have this team be playing the way that they have after the tragedy they have been over the years and not have fans this year?
The fans are so hungry in Phoenix. It's a really nice story. I don't want to hear about market size. I find the Suns with this band of talented young kids in this veteran guy who can't get a break in his career. Chris Paul cannot get a break. Got traded to the Lakers. League said, no, go to Donald Sterling. Like, he cannot get a break. Get sent to a tanking team.
Yep.
And the Suns were bad when he got there. I think the Suns story is an incredibly marketable.
I love it.
I love the Suns story.
And that's not, like, I want to give the Clippers their credit where it's due. Like,
yeah.
Me and you both wrote them off after Kawhi was ruled out, and they've been playing with a lot of heart, and I'm happy for Ty Lue, but I'm on the Suns bandwagon right now. So there were high hopes for the Nets with KD, Kyrie, and Harden all together this season. Obviously, they fell short of their goal, lost to the Bucks in the second round. And while GM Sean Marks didn't call the season a failure, he is expecting some changes this offseason.
Inevitably, there's going to be change here. That's the tough thing with, you know, with pro sports. You know, you'd love continuity throughout and so forth, but there's going to have to be changes, and they may not all be because of a decision that we decide to make. You know, our players have to make these decisions too. We'll come together as a collective group, and again, the opportunity for them and the opportunity for us is to go out there and put the best Brooklyn Nets team forward to start training camp next season.
Well, they got to get a better bench, because what's happening, Joy, is they have no bench, and therefore you're asking players with injury histories to play absurd minutes. It's just not. I mean, Kevin Durant, at this point in his career, is 33 a night. That's it, not 43.
No, I couldn't agree more. We know what Harden doesn't really have an injury history like that,
no.
But KD does, and obviously Kyrie does. You're not going to move off of the three of them.
Yeah.
He talked a little bit about it, said it's too early to discuss their futures, but they're obviously committed to them. We know that they're under contract for another season, the three of them, and a player option heading into 22-23. But that's the core. But you're absolutely right. when you have this kind of history, you have enough data to know you need a stronger bench. Now, they lost Spencer Dinwiddie, who I thought would have been huge for them with all of these injuries, but he's going to reportedly is going to decline his player option. Jeff Green, Tyler Johnson, Bruce Brown Jr., and Blake Griffin are all free agents this offseason. I'm with you. You have to figure out a way to get a much stronger bench. And that's not to say that this is going to happen again, because I don't think that this level of injury we're going to see again next year. Obviously, there's always injuries, but shortened off season, condensed season, everyone's dealt with it. We know that. I do think there will be less injuries next year, but you can't count on this, especially late into the season.
Yeah.
I don't look at the Nets season as a complete failure. Obviously, they had championship expectations, but the injuries were astounding across the board with the Nets and across the league, obviously. But you can't overcome that no matter how many stars you have on your team.
Like the Lakers season, Anthony Davis showed up out of shape. Like, that's kind of on the player. That's disappointing. Kyrie and Kevin Durant had injuries because they've been a little brittle in their career. Now, Harden had to play himself in shape, but he was great in the regular season. The Lakers season, to me, feels like a disappointment. This feels like what happens when you put a super team together and have literally no bench and one guy gets hurt.
And if you look at the history of super teams, they don't win their first year.
They just don't.
They don't. So they needed some more time. I do think they'll be back next year, but they definitely have to fix their bench. So Ben Simmons clearly struggled in the playoffs, especially at the end of this series with the Hawks. Doc River is confident the team has a plan in place for him to improve his shooting before next season.
I believe, without going in detail what we're doing, I believe we know what the right work is and the right type of work and the right way to do it. You know, you can do the work all the time, but if it's not done in the right way and the right type of work, you may not improve. After being here for a year, I really do believe we've identified what and how, and now we have to do the do part. We have to work to do it. It's not going to be an easy job, but it's definitely a job that Ben can do.
Guys, Ben's not a shooter.
We just got to come to terms with that.
That's it. That doesn't mean he's a terrible player.
No.
That doesn't mean he doesn't have extreme value. It just means that if you're going to have Ben Simmons on your team playing a lot of minutes, you need to build your team around the fact that he can't shoot. That's it.
And don't have a big. I'll say it again. Golden State has two great shooters and no big. They're a smaller team. Ben could be your point forward, your point center. It'd be great. He'd be a great fit there.
Stop trying to make players into what they're not.
Yeah.
When you have enough data, he's been playing long enough. You know that he's not a shooter.
I'm not Ben Simmons, obviously, but years ago I worked at another company and they didn't know what to do with me. I wasn't a host. I didn't do play-by-play. And one of the people said, you know, we're going to put you on games. And I went and did a football game. And it was a play-by-play guy, Sean McDonough, an analyst, I forget who it was. And they put me in there in the middle. And it was the most uncomfortable thing because I didn't want to step on the play-by-play guy or the analyst. And I remember thinking, driving home from Syracuse, it was Syracuse played Washington, why are they trying to make me what I'm not? I just talk sports and have opinions. Hope you like it. Let's just own what Ben is. Long, strong, defends, passes well, good vision, put it on the deck, can't shoot. So go to a team that's smaller, surrounded by shooters. There's about four in the league right now. He'd be fine. He'd be more than fine. He'd be a nice, nice player. That'd be great.
He's an elite defender.
Yeah. Like, well, the best guard defender in the league.
Upside and great skills. He just can't shoot. Stop trying to make him into a shooter. The data is there. He shot 55.7% in the regular season, averaged 14.3 points per game this year. Last year, 58%. He doesn't shoot. He's not a shooter.
Those are all, I mean, this, and by the way, he is great around the iron. He's impossible for a guard to defend. So he can score. He'll give you 18 a game. None will be three-pointers. It's okay.
Just stop it.
It's fine. It's good. We're all good.
Yes.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
You know, I was talking about, to start my show, the face of the league. In 40 years, we've really had seven players who were the face of the league. Some players don't want it. Generally, you're looking for a great player. Magic, Kobe, Shaq, LeBron, Michael, who are also sort of fun. Just their big personalities. Now, Bird's a little cranky and feisty. Duncan was kind of reticent to embrace that it can happen, but generally you're looking for somebody who puts his arm around it. Face of the league, to me, Zion feels different game, powerful, big smile, played at Duke, shoe exploded, but the New Orleans things gets in his way. I don't see him as like it helps not to be coastal, but on a really winning franchise. Rick Bucher now joins us live. And I said this about Kevin Durant. On all three teams, he was the most talented player, but I could argue it was always Steph's team. He struggled in OKC because management and coaching preferred the aggressive nature of kind of Westbrook. It drove KD nuts. He thought he was the guy. And then with this team, when he got hurt and Harden took over, they actually went in a great winning streak. And so I don't see it as a criticism. I don't see Kevin wanting to be the face of the league. I don't think he's really that guy, and that's absolutely fine. That is absolutely, that to me, it's like, why does he have to be the face of the league? Why can't he just be the best offensive player? Your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Honestly, my issue or my problem or the struggle is that I'm not sure exactly what Kevin Durant wants. And I am somewhat suspicious that Kevin Durant doesn't know exactly what he wants. That he's still seeking that, I don't know, validation, satisfaction, gratification from playing the game. Because he's had the opportunity to be the leading scorer in the league. He's had the opportunity to be a big fish in a small pond. He's had an opportunity to be a champion. Now he is leading the Brooklyn Nets and has had the opportunity to form his own team and come close to running his own franchise. And yet there still seems to be this, difficulty in appreciating where he is and what he has and that he's still trying to prove something. So that is the challenge. I mean, the faces of the league that have been most successful is that we can feel and love and appreciate their passion and their comfort in who they are and what they're doing. And we can love the game because they so clearly love the game. I think KD loves to play. What he's trying to get out of playing the game is still an uncertainty to me. And I believe is an uncertainty to him. And as a result, anytime you feel kind of uncertain about somebody, it's hard to embrace them and see them as the leader or the figurehead of whatever it is that you're enthralled with.
You know, the Ben Simmons stuff is interesting. I have thoughts later on this, but when you're going to trade a player, you often want the player to look good. You want to say nice things about him so he has more leverage. In Philadelphia, you know.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Right. Well, it's funny because the Eagles with Carson Wentz, a bunch of stuff started leaking that he was not good in the locker room. You couldn't trust him. And the Eagles got nothing in a trade despite the fact he's a brilliant talent who the game got in his head. Simmons, now watch the Sixers. Doc comes out very fixable. We can fix this. I think they're going to go on a rehab tour because what happened to the Eagles was, because Simmons and Wentz are the same, by the way, great talents. The game got in their head. They need a rehab. One's going to the Colts. But if I'm the Sixers, I'm not going to do what the Eagles did, which is let a bunch of stuff leak that he's a bad guy and he's hard to play with and you can't correct it, right? Like you want to say nice stuff about him.
Sure, but here's the reality. They need to make a move before next season starts, and the tape don't lie, as they like to say. We've seen what Ben Simmons is, and this is not like 1 year. He's 5 years into his career, essentially, because the first year he didn't play, and he had the greatest opportunity ever with a broken bone in his foot to do nothing but form shoot and to develop a stroke. Stand still at being 6'10", 6'11", he can shoot a standstill jumper. He can shoot a standstill three-pointer. Made no attempt to do that. And then after his first year in the league, when it became clear that he needed a jump shot to be his most effective self, did not do anything to achieve that. In fact, if you look at the percentage of shots that he's taking beyond 10 feet, it has steadily decreased, as has his efficiency in taking them. So that is the great mystery. And you talked about it earlier in the show with Joy, and And here's the reality. He's not a point guard.
Yeah.
Yes, he's talented. Yes, he has skills. But he's more built to be a power forward, a ball-handling power forward, than he is a point guard. Because it's not just a matter of not shooting from range. He's not attacking and creating. Elfrid Payton couldn't shoot from range, but he was still trying to attack and create for others. Ben does that at times, but he's at his best doing it in transition. You get into a half-court set. I mean, you saw it during the playoffs. They basically had him handing the ball off to Seth Curry and saying, bringing the ball up court, handing it to Seth Curry, and then running to the dunker spot. That's like being the bass player in a band. Yeah. You're just doing the bass line. And for a guy who's got a max contract and that you're calling a point guard, that's simply not going to work. So, I mean, ultimately, what everything points to him needing a fresh start someplace else. And much the same way another guy that was supposed to be the next Philadelphia 76ers point guard, Markelle Fultz, had to go someplace else to restart his career. I think Ben Simmons has to go someplace else, and he has to adopt a different mindset and a different position if he's going to make good on anything that he has talent-wise.
All right, Clippers, Suns, Phoenix won without Chris Paul. Huge edge. I thought the Clippers could have stole one. I do think they're bigger. Yep. They got more veteran players. I think they match up really well with Phoenix, and Phoenix is just, right now, confidence is such a thing in these playoffs between players and teams, and Phoenix believes last eight games they win by an average of 15 points. Is there anything, like this morning, of, I think it's a 6-7 game series. Do you lean with any team after game one?
Probably lean Clippers, quite honestly, because I thought that they could steal that game. And I look under the circumstances, less than 48 hours, you're playing in the next series while the Suns really had the opportunity to gather themselves and even had a little bit of time to adjust to the fact that they were playing without Chris Paul. You're playing at home. Everything tilted in their direction. I thought that the one mistake that the Clippers made is that Paul George and Reggie Jackson tried to do too much. I keep hearing about how Paul George has to dominate from people that have been in the game and supposedly know the game. They haven't been watching the Clippers play, honestly, because they are at their best when Paul George doesn't do too much.
Right.
Be aggressive, but when he's rebounding, when he's playing defense, and when the ball is moving and everybody is getting involved, that is when they're at their best. And if you look at the four teams remaining, this whole idea that you need a big three or you need to lean on your superstars, it's been the exact opposite. The four teams standing have all relied on their depth and versatility. They've had guys like Terrence Mann and Kevin Huerter and these lesser lights who have had the opportunity and the ability to step up because the stars have given them room to do so. That is how this is going to work. I mean, Devin Booker was sensational in game one, but campaign was given the opportunity to be just as aggressive and made good on it. To me, that's really going to determine who the next champion is. And not to circle back, but that's the loss that the Philadelphia 76ers have in all this, because now you have two teams in the Eastern Conference and the Milwaukee Bucks and the Atlanta Hawks who get to discover that about their team. Their stars get to discover and come into the next season with the confidence of what it takes to get to the conference finals and potentially win a championship. Sixers are getting the benefit of none of that. So you want to talk about Ben Simmons, you want to talk about Doc Rivers. The Philadelphia 76ers have an expectation problem that is only worse now that they've got some teams in the East that are going to be more versed in what it takes to win and win at the end of the season than the Philadelphia 76ers.
Rick Bucher, we got to run. Good seeing you, Bukes. Appreciate it. Hawks, Atlanta tonight. I'll take Milwaukee in five games. Clippers, Suns. I'll take the Suns again tonight, but I think it's a six-game series.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Great to have you in on a Tuesday. I saw something the other day, and I couldn't believe the media gave it any attention, but the media, myself included, we do this too often. We spend time giving airtime and a microphone to crazy people or people that don't deserve the airtime. There was a story out there that a third of Republican voters thought Trump, the election, was stolen from him. And I thought to myself, well, there's more Democrats in America than there are Republicans, 55 to 45, and none of them think that. None of the independent voters, 6 to 8%, think that. And a majority of Republicans don't think that. That's the story. That we don't have a bunch of crazy people. A small group of wackos can't get over their delusion. Why give them time? Let's focus on positive and reasonable people. Yesterday, an NFL player who I do not know did something, and it's courageous. It shouldn't have to be courageous, but unfortunately, it does take courage to do this because there's a percentage, small as it is, of Americans that if you don't live like them and look like them and think like them and do exactly what they do, then you are different, and I can't accept that. But a player came out and was courageous and said this, and I thought it was a wonderful NFL moment.
What's up, people? I'm Carl Massive. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that like one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate, and I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project.
I like to meet Carl, love to have him on the show, and I just like to talk football. Not about his lifestyle, but we have to. Because there's that small percentage of people who can't embrace anything that's not exactly like them. John Gruden rushed out to thank him, so did Mark Davis, so did all the smart people. Media, let's embrace it and celebrate it and support people who support Carl. We have microphones, and they're very valuable, and newspapers, and print, and TV. Let's stop giving airtime to angry people, loners on the internet, people who can't handle anybody that doesn't live exactly like them, and people who think because their candidate lost, it was stolen. There is a responsibility all of us have in the media. On this show every day, Joy and I select topics. Many are not worthy of airtime. Sometimes we don't get it always right. But this story is worthy because suicide is a problem in America with young people who are gay and different and not like your son or daughter. Great day for the NFL. Great day for Carl. Happy for him. Thought, if you'd like?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I'm happy for Carl. You know, it's obviously still a very scary thing to do, to put yourself out there and, you know, put yourself out for scrutiny and the reaction from those people. Although I will say I overwhelmingly saw a lot of acceptance and kindness and respect, and especially from around the league and the sports world. But, you know, to his point, representation is very important. Seeing people that look like you, seeing people that are the same sex as you, seeing people that have the same lifestyle as you, especially when you're a young person, is incredibly important. And that's why he mentioned the Trevor Project. And that's why he mentioned representation, and that's why he also put in his written statement that studies show that having an accepting adult when you come out as a young person can drastically affect, you know, your self-esteem and, of course, lower suicide rates in LGBTQ kids. So you can be that person, you can be that adult, you can be that coach, you can be that family member. And the more that it's talked about, the more accepting people are. And it's educational as well, obviously. Like, having someone like Carl out there, putting himself out there, representing for his community can help educate that percentage of people that you are talking about.
One of the things I love about sports is just take the NFL or the NBA. NBA kids come overseas.
Yeah.
They go to G League. They go to big schools. They go to small schools. And they all harmonize. It's about ball. In the NFL, some go to Alabama. They're great five-star prospects. First round star in the NFL. And yet half the league is undrafted. What makes sports so great is you get all these kids from different walks of life. Some quarterbacks come from quarterback families, and then some quarterbacks are doubted and undrafted, and Tony Romo becomes an American icon. It's all about ball. It's all about harmonizing. It's all about bringing us together. Good for you, Carl. Hour two next.